Hi everyone, and welcome to Forest.chat, where we talk about individual endeavour in Western Australia, what it takes, what it means, and how you do it. I'm your host, Paul Vandermeer, and in today's episode, we'll be talking with Susie McMahon about balancing sport and professional aspirations. Susie grew up in the northwest of England in a large family where most conversations focused on sport. Football, tennis, athletics, the Olympics. She graduated with a master's from University of Edinburgh and qualified as a solicitor in two UK jurisdictions, leading to work with the UK government and London law firms and a world-leading financial organisation. Susie moved to Western Australia over 10 years ago from Scotland and now works as a senior legal counsel in a federal government department. A keen and capable recreational runner, Susie is passionate and continual improvement both in her chosen legal career and in distance running, whilst hoping to inspire the next generation of young runners and lawyers. She is the current WA state record holder for the half marathon in the females 50 to 55 age category, and her 1 hour 23 minute 30 second at the Gold Coast Marathon half in 2023 gave her the national 2023 Masters 50 to 55 title. She has participated in races around the world and also raised money for cancer and mental health charities. Welcome to Forest.chat, Susie.
Thank you, Paul. I'm very happy to be here on Forest.chat, and I look forward to sharing some of my journey and insights, and hopefully others can take away from that to inspire their own journey.
It's great to have you here, Susie. I tried to summarise your bio and quickly got to the point where all I could do was rearrange some facts. That points to you having a lot going on in your life from both a career and personal sporting perspective.
It's quite demanding balancing both a sort of a high demanding professional job and also being quite competitive, wanting to achieve in a sporting capacity as well, particularly as you get older as well. And, you know, I've been very lucky to have a very good support network and, you know, a very good sort of family support as well. And, you know, it's just having that internal drive, and I'm sure it's the same in lots of walks of life, that sort of pushes you to achieve.
And what inspired you to get onto this professional and sporting path?
Well, I was quite academic as a youngster, and I went to a very academic school where they sort of push you to be lawyers or doctors. But I did, I grew up in a time where we all watched LA Law and Ally McBeal, so that was an easy path to go into. Although I did have a hankering of being a sports journalist for a while, because my father was a sports journalist and he also played professional sport. So that was quite inspiring to see how he also ran a business and played professional sport, because in the 1980s, what he did wasn't paid. It was semi-professional. So those sort of things inspired me. And also being in a family where pretty much every weekend and every summer holidays, you're watching sporting events or the Olympics, and that's all you talk about. That's inspiring as well. And I grew up, certainly from a running perspective, I grew up in that great era of Sebastian Coe, Steve Cram, Steve Ovett, Daley Thompson, all those brilliant British athletes at a time where like the Liverpool football team were like dominating Europe. It sort of gives you that sort of drive and background. And I think just being academic as well, you know, I was always looking to better myself and be the best at what I do. And I think I'm still a little bit like that.
And what keeps you doing it?
Well, I don't have children and I don't like being bored. Yes, I think that's probably about it. And I think, you know, WA is a great place to live. The weather keeps you going. It's very easy to get up and train. It's much easier to get up here, go for a run like I did this morning before work, than it is on a very cold, dark, freezing cold day. You know, you might have sleet coming in on the banks of the River Clyde in Glasgow. Yeah, much, much easier. But it's also, you know, the day we stop learning is the day that, you know, your life ends pretty much. So I see it all as a challenge. And it's just what I do. It's just, it helps you focus. My sport helps me focus on work because it's like that outlet. It's that switch off. And I think a lot of people find that's the way that they manage being able to achieve at work, by having that outlet and that balance in their life.
So there's a real symbiotic relationship between your professional life and your sporting life.
Yeah, I think lawyers naturally are very competitive as well, so it does translate quite well.
Yes, I'm sure there's a lot of ways that you can compete, both in, like from a work perspective, and also sporting is all about competitions.
Yeah, especially if you work in, being a lawyer, I've done a lot of litigation, and that's all like very, you know, two sides to every story, and one side's ultimately going to win. it's the same in sport. You know, somebody has to win, somebody has to lose. Although in a work perspective, you don't really lose, you just learn. It's, some people say you can never fail. Even I saw a tennis player say the other day, there's no win or loss, there's win and a learning experience. So you can look at that from a work perspective as well.
Absolutely. Sounds like wise words. It takes real resilience to achieve both professional and sporting goals and balance all your other commitments. What does it take you, Susie, to do that?
Well, I think being British, I think the weather makes you very resilient. You know, we're used to dealing with rubbish weather. And I was watching a costume drama and one of the characters said, you know, what makes the British British? And somebody said, well, it's the weather. But anyway, so that's just as an aside. So what makes me resilient? I think there's two things here that from a sporting perspective, I became resilient because I did suffer a really horrific injury a number of years ago. 6-7 years ago, I fell over and snapped my femur. So I had to have my leg reconstructed. I had to learn to walk again. Couldn't drive, couldn't walk, couldn't get out of the house for 3 months. And I was told I could never run again. But that determination, resilience helped me overcome that. And also having a support network, like a good physio, a good naturopath, people that were willing to sort of help me and invest time in me. I did overcome that. And then to where I am now, as you said in the introduction, you know, I'm a state record holder at master's level and I'm continually improving even in my 50s. So that sort of challenge, that level of real physical challenge makes you resilient. It's a case of you follow a process. It's like step by step, you know, it's you've got to hit certain landmarks to your recovery before you can actually get back to any kind of normality. I think when people say to me, how do you run better now and like you do with that massive scar on your leg and you've had 2 leg operations and were told you would never run again? I just said, well, I put in the work, I had a process and I'm very resilient. I also have a high pain threshold as well. And then on the flip side, in terms of work, developing that resilience was quite hard because when you're quite experienced in your professional career and at quite a senior level in the UK, to then in my sort of mid-40s, to take a step back and say, right, I want to move to Australia. This could be a good move for my family. To then have no contacts when you arrive here. I mean, I literally knew nobody when I got off the plane in Perth. Most of my contacts were East Coast. But then having to build that resilience of absolutely knowing nobody. And there were days where I would sit on the floor and think, what have I done? I've given up a great career. How do I rebuild and recreate that here? So I had to build that internal resilience and make contacts. And I was very, very lucky through what I do as, you know, sporting, you know, the sporting context, running, I was able to meet a lot of people and then that gave me more confidence. And then by using things like, you know, LinkedIn or, you know, these professional networks and learning to talk to people and, you know, realizing things here don't work in the same way. I drank a lot of coffee. So job interviews here are a lot of coffee catch-ups. And there was a lot of false starts. I did have 2 good jobs, but not jobs that I felt I was a good fit for 5 or 6 years. And then I finally got the opportunity once I became a citizen to move into the role that I really wanted, that I was a good fit for, that I felt that I could actually give back and be my authentic self at work, which is the public sector, you know, serving the taxpaying community, serving the Australian public, because that's where I started out in the UK. So I've gone full circle. But in terms of my personality, that's where I best sit. But I've had to build resilience to be able to get to there. I mean, dealing with a lot of knockbacks and constantly having to try and make contacts with people and expand your network in an area that, you know nobody, it's very, very challenging. But you build that internal resilience because you've got that determination you want to achieve. And I've been very, very lucky to get to where I am now, sort of 10 years later.
And in amongst all of that process, did you find you were naturally good at particular things?
Well, I think I've definitely got some kind of sporting talent. I don't know how, in what area. It might have been in hockey or tennis, but I think you work hard. And I think the one sort of talent I have is it's that work ethic, which I probably get from my parents and my grandparents. You know, my grandparents ran a number of businesses. My father ran a business and had a sporting career. So I think I have that sort of work ethic. So I'm very, very good at that. And in terms of work, I'm very good at sort of just adapting to an environment and also relating to people and building relationships. And all of those are important in everything I do.
And did you struggle in any particular areas?
I think as you age, if you have a sporting interest or you still want to achieve sportingly, we all struggle, but you have to work out ways around it. So the best example of that is in a, to enable me to still be able to run at a high level and break state records. I hope to continue to do so as I get older. You know, we can keep doing that. That's the beauty of like masters level sport. You have to accept that you have to do a lot of things to enable that. So Pilates, yoga, swimming, cross training, get your nutrition right, get your supplements right. So there's lots of sort of things in that area that you need to just accept that you've got to do. And in terms of, you know, things I've also had to work hard at, public speaking sort of, and managing meetings as well, managing meetings, and also dealing with, you know, as a female in what is still very much a male dominated profession, dealing with that sort of gender challenge in the workplace is something I've had to work at as well. You know, dealing with gender deafness in meetings. People assume if you're a female that you've not got anything useful to say sometimes, or because females are different types of leaders, quite often you get people say, oh, don't be so emotional. So the correct response to that is that all you've got? Because you would never say that to a man in a senior position in a meeting. So that's the sort of things I've had to work on to get to where I am in both sort of my sporting interest and also what pays the bills, which is like work.
Uzi, we've talked about what it takes, and it will now be good to look at the difference achieving a balance between professional and sporting goals makes. We've heard what it takes to achieve a balance between professional and sporting goals. Now it's time to explore what it means. Uzi, how has achieving a balance between professional and sporting goals changed you, your family, or the community?
I'm certainly recognisable around Perth. Quite often I'll be running along the coast and somebody will say, oh, hi, Suzanne, hi, Susie, and I'll have no idea who they are, which is a constant source of amusement to my friends. So I think that's probably changed me a little bit in that that never used to happen in Scotland because it's a much bigger place, there's more people. I think I often give up time to coach a few youngsters and make a difference to them, and that's not something I'd ever thought about before. And I thought about the people that had inspired me and whether I could give back and inspire younger people. So, for example, I run with a young girl called Miller on a Wednesday morning. She's now 15. And she had some learning difficulties, real confidence issues, which you see a lot amongst teenagers. And just by spending time with her and, you know, sort of indulging her passion for running, she really wants to get into personal training and running. And she's got two academic older sisters and she always felt she was lacking. She's really grown in confidence and it's been really nice to watch that journey. She sees me as like an inspiring person, which is nice to hear. But it's, you know, her parents have said so often that they're so grateful to somebody just spending time with her and they've seen a difference in her as well. So if I can do that sort of thing as a result of what I've been through and share those experiences to enable her to meet challenges she will face with a sort of resilience, then that has sort of changed the way I approach things as well. And, you know, at work, definitely being able to get to that senior level, I'm now in a position where I can choose what I do to empower my staff. So a couple of weeks ago, it was International Women's Day. So I was able to host a panel session where we discussed things about, you know, who are inspiring women, you know, what does it take to overcome that sort of gender imbalance, you know, give an example of challenges you faced, how you've overcome them. And, you know, because I've been able to get to that senior level, I'm able to now take control and run panels like that to inspire the younger lawyers as well. So I think that's the difference in me, that I'm able to now do that and inspire the next generation, which I think is, you know, it's a really valuable thing that we have, because I wouldn't like to be young these days. I don't know about you, Paul, but, you know, it looks really hard work. We didn't have social media when I was growing up. None of that. We used the telephone. We wrote letters. It's all about instant fame these days. You know, people have very short attention deficits as well. So it's giving people resilience tools to deal with the much faster paced world that we live in as well. And, you know, we're all a little bit guilty of spending a lot of time on our phones, but it's sort of teaching youngsters that that's not real life. You only see what people want you to see. You need to step back and do what you want to do and also be your best self. You don't have to be what everybody else says you should be because it's on social media. You know, you should be who you want to be.
There's definitely a lot to building resilience, and just the different way of the different generations have had to deal with that. The current generation, when I compare it to what I experienced, doesn't seem to have as many, I'll say, tools in the toolkit to actually go through and achieve a similar level of resilience.
I think that's a really good point. I think our parents, our grandparents, they went through the war. They had to build resilience. They didn't have the benefit of social media. And also going to counsellors wasn't a thing back then. I think these days there's a lot of expectation things come easy, and they don't. You have to put in the work. A lot of people don't understand that. It all comes easy, you know. You can all be an influencer on social media, but how sustainable is that? Probably not that sustainable. Is that going to give you a salary for the rest of your life? Probably not. Is it going to, you know, fund your superannuation fund? Probably not. So it would be nice if we could like get back to something a bit more simple, a bit more realistic. So I think in terms of building resilience, you know, one tip I would say, stay away from social media, certainly to youngsters. And I quite often say, don't compare yourself to anybody. I certainly don't. There have been periods of my life where you do, and you always look around you. But if you can start comparing yourself to somebody, that is the thief of joy in whatever you do, whether it be work or running. Never compare yourself to anybody, because it's all about you and what you do.
Yes, it's a trap that people can fall into very easily. I've done it myself, comparing to others, and it takes a conscious effort to stay out of that quagmire of what goes on. Another element that I've found is very helpful for me has been actually setting goals, and actually even small goals, and achieving them piece by piece. You know, you achieve a small goal here, hopefully a small goal every day, so you can say, tick, I've got that one done. And that in itself gives you a very positive response, feedback. That certainly helps.
That's a really good tip as well. You know, you can put things in bite-sized chunks, as they say. That's, you know, I organise my work in bite-sized chunks. You have a to-do list today and you do one thing at a time, or you do a little bit. And if you put that into a sporting context, one of the ways that, you know, I overcome my injury was, you know, I got into a training programme with, you know, a qualified coach, a physio, and you tick the box every day. You hit those milestones every day, and then you get to where you want to be. It's like climbing a mountain. You can rest at base camp sometimes before you travel up the mountain a little bit further, or you can come back down to another base camp. I use that analogy quite a lot, both at work and if I'm talking to somebody about running. It's like, you know, it's okay that you don't improve for a while, because you will if you just keep ticking the box, you know, achieving something every day. So it's nice when you have a training program that you get a little green tick every day and you move on. It's like, trust the process. So it's that applies in sport, and that applies in what I do at work as well. You know, you have to, there's a process to everything. It's like going through steps to achieve something. There's no shortcuts as well. It's just about hard work a lot of the time as well. And being willing to sacrifice time, you know, and invest time and sometimes money as well.
So seeing positive change is very rewarding, and not seeing the changes can give us the jitters, like, was all the effort worthwhile? Sometimes we just need to trust the process and wait. Now let's look at the steps that you took to achieve balance between your professional and sporting career. Doing things can be daunting, and we now know you have the resolve and dedication. What are the key steps you took, Susie, to achieve balance between your professional and sporting lives?
I think the one thing is, you know, it is difficult to balance a demanding career and, you know, sporting achievement. And I think you have to be afraid not to fail. I think I said earlier, there's no such thing as failure. Failure is a challenge. It's an opportunity to grow. So if you accept that at some point we all make mistakes, it's important to own those mistakes, fix them, and don't make them again. I say that to junior lawyers all the time, and, you know, junior runners. Oh, I went out too fast in that 5K. Well, don't do it again. You learned a lesson. You crashed at 3K. Don't do it again. You know, I've done it myself. So it's that, not that sort of permission, give yourself permission to fail. I think that's very, very important. So that was one step, was like letting myself know that that's okay. It is okay to fail, because it's an opportunity to grow, and it's not really failure. It's more of a challenge. In terms of steps as well, you know, it's that process thing, you know, have a process, achieve something every day. You know, even if it's one thing on your to-do list that you tick off, that's an achievement. And, you know, be willing to commit time and sacrifice as well. You know, a lot of my friends say, well, how do you do what you do? It's like, well, I have to sacrifice a lot of time. You know, I don't go out late. I have to go to bed early because I have to get up early to fit things in to get to work on time. Be willing to sacrifice as well. A lot of people aren't willing to make those sacrifices to actually achieve anything. Everybody I know who's achieved in the sporting world or in work, certainly the sector I work in, has sacrificed. So, for example, in the 1980s, there's a story about Sebastian Coe went out and trained two times on Christmas Day, and he sacrificed, like, you know, having that extra dessert or staying inside, went out and trained twice because he knew his rivals would be training twice. And then later in life, he and Steve Ovett were having a discussion, and he told that story to Steve Ovett, who was his main rival, and Steve turned around and said, "Oh, so you only went out twice?" Because Steve Ovett had been out three times. So I thought that was a very, very funny story. So it's just be willing to, like, sacrifice as well. And I think in terms of steps, it's making sure you have a support network. You know, I've got a great support network. You know, I have a very good friend who's a naturopath, has advised me a lot in helping me get over my injury. I had a great physio, a great sports doctor. I've got a great running coach, and I have great mentors at work, and I have a very supportive boss. So it's, if you can create all those, and they should be steps you look to achieve your perfect environment, then that really helps as well. And I think those sort of things are the steps that you require as well. And you have to be adaptable. I think, you know, we've all had to learn to adapt through COVID, as you know, Paul. You know, whether a race gets cancelled and you have to change your plans, like 3 days out, or in terms of work, all of a sudden you're in a new job and you've been sent to work at home, you know, you've got to learn to adapt to those environments. And having that resilience and putting steps in place to, well, how am I going to work at home? Have I got the right equipment? Can I actually do this? So for me, it was all about routine. Everything's about routine. I think I get that from my mother. She had four children. How she managed as we were growing up, I've often asked her that question. She said, you just have to have a routine. And routine solves a lot of problems. I'm sure you probably find that yourself with all your sort of interests.
Yes, yes, definitely. Having, you know, times in the week when you do specific things, that really helps a lot. Susie, do you have a secret tip for others to follow in your footsteps?
Oh, having a plan at the start of the day. Although in what I do for work, sometimes that plan has to go out the window and you have to change. So I do think if you have a plan, you're willing to adapt, and you've got other tools in your box to be resilient. And that can even mean having a glass of wine at the end of the night. Whatever works for you. And I think also accepting that everybody's different and giving yourself permission. Fail, but see it as a challenge, I think is the tip I would give to people. And accept that, you know, when you're getting older, things get harder, especially in a sporting context. You have to try harder. You have to train harder. You have to put in more time, because your body won't always do what that of a 25-year-old, 30-year-old will do. But I think that's sort of common. A lot of sports people find that. You know, for example, like you look at sort of Roger Federer, Nadal, Andy Murray, their bodies are now starting to let them down. So, you know, they either step away gracefully from the sport or you get forced to retire. I think it's sort of just accepting that things change and things are always moving. Now, they're the sort of the main steps that, you know, and tips I would give to other people. And I quite often say to, like, the young athletes I coach, it's like, just enjoy the process. If you enjoy the process, you'll get a lot back from it. It's that you only get back out of everything what you put in. It's the same at work. I've only got to where I've got to at work because I've been willing to put in time as well. I've been very lucky to have, like, inspiring people around me as well. You know, as you know, recently my elderly aunt passed away, and I always think that she was quite inspiring because at 93... she was still using Facebook and WhatsApp, which she'd learnt to, in her 1980s, how to use. So that was an example of her being adaptable to a new environment. But back in the 1950s, and this is way ahead of her generation, she campaigned for equal pay for women on bread delivery vans and actually achieved it. That was way ahead of her time. So don't be afraid to take those steps and be a bit out there, because that's certainly something that, you know, when I thought about it, that's really inspiring for somebody in their 50s. Because even now we're sort of battling against that sort of that diversity, that inclusion thing. But for somebody in the 1950s to achieve that, that's incredible.
Absolutely, it is. And society has changed quite a bit. You imagine it would be easier, but you'll certainly find something that will challenge you.
Yeah, it's one of those discussion points, isn't it? I was at a dinner a number of years ago. It was for women in mining, and it was some award. And the woman that won the award in front of tables of, and there was lots of male execs there as well. She said, oh, this is great. I'm really glad that we're recognising women in a male-dominated industry. But we'll know when we've really achieved something on, you know, the gender pay gap and inclusion of women in the workplace, when this isn't even a conversation. And I thought that was very, very powerful, probably the most powerful thing I've ever heard on that. And I quite often share that story with people at work. But at the moment, it is still a conversation. And I still think as a woman in the workplace and a woman trying to achieve in the sporting arena, it's still a challenge. It's still very much a challenge. But it's something that we still need to have those conversations, particularly with like the younger generation coming into the workplace.
Yes, there's some big challenges. And I definitely agree that, you know, the fact you have to talk about something just means that there's still work to do to get it to where it needs to be. Having a plan and working the plan can be very different things. It's great to hear how you worked your way through your plan. Thank you for sharing your experience of balancing professional and sporting goals, Susie. And from all Forest.chat listeners, we wish you all the best in your future endeavours.
Thank you, Paul. I mean, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. It always is. And I really hope that the Forest.chat listeners can benefit from my experience and journey and listen to many more interviews like this with you as you work your way around Western Australian individuals who've achieved things in many different sectors.
Thank you, Susie. You've been listening to Forest.chat, where we talk about individual endeavour in Western Australia, what it takes, what it means, and how you do it. I'm your host, Paul Vandermeer, and in today's episode, we talked with Susie McMahon about achieving balance between professional and sporting goals. Remember, there are four ways to get involved with Forest.chat. Share the domain Forest.chat with your friends, family, and people you meet. Listen to the published episodes at forest.chat/episodes, book an interview at forest.chat/interview, book an advert at forest.chat/advert. I'm looking forward to joining you with our next interview. Until next time, enjoy making it happen.